Today on the 21st, as the Omicron variant surges across Illinois, hospitals are reporting more COVID-positive patients than at any time during the pandemic. The medical system itself is showing significant signs of wear. We'll hear from doctors and other providers working on the front lines about the surge and about the toll it's taking on them. I'm Brian Mackey. That's all coming up today on the 21st, which is a production of Illinois Public Media, airing on WILL in Urbana, WUIS in Springfield, WGLT in Normal, WCBU in Peoria, WNIJ in DeKalb, and WVIK in the Quad Cities. But first, the national news from NPR. From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. The Omicron surge is continuing to put a strain on hospitals and healthcare workers. Yesterday, the director of the Illinois Department of Public Health, Dr. Ngozi Ezike, put the current surge in the context of the entire pandemic. And listeners, it was bleak.
We have never had this many COVID patients in the hospital at any point in the pandemic, not in spring of 2020, not in the winter of 2020. This is the absolute highest number, and not just by a couple. Our previous totals have been smashed. The previous totals of COVIDs in the hospital were about 6,000, I think 6,000, and we're over
6,175.
But who's counting? 6,175, and we are at over 7,100. So we have significantly passed all previous records.
And the Ezike said the vast majority of those more than 7,100 COVID hospitalizations in Illinois are being driven by the unvaccinated, who she says make up 80% of those cases. Space in intensive care units is also becoming scarce, with just 9% of total beds available across Illinois. And we don't even know if we've yet hit the peak of the Omicron surge. As the state grapples with yet another wave of COVID cases 2 years into this pandemic, Dr. Ezike also pointed to the burden faced by the men and women working in hospitals.
Imagine yourself as one of the nurses or the doctors that's going into the umpteenth patient room to treat a person for something that was preventable. Our healthcare workers are burning the candle at both ends and in the middle as well to care for COVID patients who could have avoided the hospitalization if they were up to date on their vaccine. I hear people say, oh, I know someone. I know someone who had the vaccine and they still got sick. But please don't equate someone with a cough, runny nose, or a sore throat to someone having to be admitted into the hospital and need precious hospital resources.
Yesterday, we got a voice memo on that note from a nurse talking about burnout.
Hi, my name is Heather Mangano, and I am a nurse at Springfield Memorial Hospital. I currently work on the intermediate care unit for COVID-positive patients. I have been a nurse for about 3 years now, and I have spent over half my career caring for patients with COVID. And every day, I continue to learn and adapt to this ever-changing patient population. And the things as a nurse that have been hardest for me, I couldn't have really learned in nursing school. Things like handling the chaos and the uncertainty, the phone calls with family members, the overwhelming emotions that I faced on a daily basis, anger, fear, anxiety, frustration, and sadness, not just within myself, but what I witness with patients and their family members. I continue to go to work, and I continue to fight to end the pandemic and to save lives. And I guess at the end of the day, I just want people to realize that we are still here and we are still fighting.
Thank you so much for sharing that, Heather. Joining me now to talk more about this are three more frontline healthcare workers from around Illinois. Dr. Julie Lewis is medical director of the emergency department at OSF Healthcare St. Joseph Medical Center in Bloomington. Dr. Lewis, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
Dr. Michelle Prickett is pulmonary and critical care specialist at Northwestern Memorial Hospital. Dr. Prickett, welcome to the 21st. Thank you for being here as well.
Thanks for having me.
And Dr. Brendan McAvoy is an attending physician in the Department of Emergency Medicine at the Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana. He's also a clinical assistant professor at Carle Illinois College of Medicine. Dr. McAvoy, thank you for coming on the show today.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Listeners, our lines are going to be open throughout this conversation, 800-222-9455. This is your chance if you have a COVID question for a doctor who's been working on the front lines of this pandemic, 800-222-9455. And we'd also love to hear if there are other frontline healthcare workers out there. What are you seeing in your hospital or in your clinic? How are you feeling? How's morale? 800-222-9455 is the number to call. That's 800-222-9455, or you can tweet us at 21st Show, at 21ST Show. Dr. Prickett, I'm going to begin with you. I understand you're working the COVID ward today at Northwestern Memorial. What have you been seeing during this Omicron surge?
So our numbers are continue to be high. We've been high since spring of 2020. They've gone down slightly, but we've never returned to normal. So our staff have been working overtime for almost 2 years now, and we continue to see patients coming in every day. I just finished rounds this morning. We took additional COVID patients. We are near our cap of where we can, you know, safely care for patients. And about 75% of the patients I saw this morning are COVID positive.
And how are you feeling? I mean, we're 2 years into this pandemic, as you said, yet another surge, highest hospitalization rate so far. What is that? How does that leave you?
Honestly, it kind of just leaves you numb at this point. You're so tired. You're so just seeing the same thing over and over again. It's been different emotions over the course of the pandemic. In the beginning, it was more fear, fear of the unknown, fear of if I would get this. Now it's, it went to anger. Now it's just fatigue. Honestly, we're just very, very tired. Our staffing levels, people that work in the hospital live in the community. And we've had so much community spread that it starts to affect our staffing. And so our staff have gotten sick as well. And that impacts those that can provide care in the hospital. So to compound all the thing we have, you know, we've had in terms of strains on our staff and the people caring for those that are hospitalized, COVID and not, we have just been through the ringer and been running the marathon, and we just feel like we want to get off that treadmill pretty soon, and it hasn't slowed down for us.
It hasn't slowed down, yeah. And I want to come back to that and go a little deeper on the question of staffing a little later in the conversation. But Dr. McAvoy, let me bring you into the conversation. You work in an emergency room or emergency department. I wonder if what you've been seeing now with this latest surge, seemingly driven by the Omicron variant, how is it different from what previous surges have been like, say the Delta surge this past summer?
Yeah, I think the thing that stands out to me the most is just the volumes and how quickly they came on. I just finished a stretch of working pretty much every day since Christmas, and the volumes in the ER were something like I had never seen for the last 2 years throughout the pandemic. And while the patients generally tend to be not as sick, the combination of the pure volume as well as the staffing shortage that Dr. Prickett just referred to have really played a huge role. And it's really, as Dr. Prickett referred to, it's very it's exhausting. And it's been tough for everyone.
You know, earlier today, I saw that Memorial Hospital in Springfield put out a statement reminding people that the ER is not a testing site, right? Do you, Dr. McAvoy, see people coming into the ER who should not be coming in, maybe just to get tested? Can you talk about, you know, the strain that puts on the facilities and the people?
Without question. That's actually, I think, a really important point that needs to be kind of shared with the community at large. You know, we see a lot of what we kind of refer to as walking well. People who are, yes, they have COVID symptoms, you know, a sore throat, runny nose, congestion, even fevers. But they are taking up space in the emergency room for people who are a lot sicker and who really need care more urgently or emergently. I think if you have mild symptoms, you're breathing okay, you don't have any significant chest pain, you're able to eat and drink, I think getting tested at at home with a rapid test or at Walgreens or CVS is much more conducive to allowing our ERs and our hospitals to function at a high level. Because really, I mean, just the other day when I was working, I mean, my entire list of patients that I had was all COVID patients, and you know, three quarters of them were there essentially just to get tested and just to, you know, with mild symptoms. So I think we could really use some release of the pressure by having those patients stay at home.
All right, I want to go down to the phones. We have a Hollis is calling from on the road. Hollis, I understand you're driving a truck. I wanted to get to you sooner than later in case we you run into a cellular dead zone. Thanks for calling in.
Yes, I believe I have it. My daughter and her boyfriend tested positive twice. When I left the house Monday, I started getting sick and all the symptoms and everything's going on. I travel around America here. Anywhere I go, I've been wearing my mask when I go in to get something to eat to try to work my way back home. How long will I not transmit it to my wife when I finally get home? That'd be my key question.
How long do you have to? I understand you have two shots. You've been the
yes,
initial
also
round.
Had, yeah. I've had the initial round. I couldn't take my other one for a few more months.
Okay.
But I've been sick all week.
I'm sorry to hear that, Hollis. Thank you for calling in with the question, and I hope you have a speedy recovery. Dr. Prickett, do you want to take that maybe?
Sure, Hollis. Thanks for what you're doing. We really appreciate that as well. I know it's hard. In terms of transmission, it depends on when those symptoms came and whether or not you're vaccinated. So for what we're seeing for people that are vaccinated, when they have that day of symptom onset, they may actually have the most transmission in the days after. So it's going to be probably around 5 to 10 days that you may transmit to your wife or those around you. So I'm glad you're wearing your mask. At this point, I tell everyone, upgrade your mask to the one that is most protective, most comfortable, and that you're going to wear the most and can be consistent with its use. So when you do get home, so on your way home, please be safe. Please wear your mask when you're around others. If you're with someone, crack the window. You want to have ventilation. This is an airborne disease. There's droplets as well, but we want to make sure our air is fresh. When you do get home, isolate. If you can have your own room, your own bathroom, and crack those windows in your home and have everyone wear the mask, the best mask they can, for at least 10 days, just to make sure you're outside that window, I think is the safest thing to do. So there are ways to keep yourself safe and others around you. But if you suspect COVID, I tell everyone, if you've got a cold, you've got a scratchy throat, quarantine, make sure you protect the rest of those around you. And you can do it by staying home, wearing a mask when you're at home. When you're around others in your home, if you have to be, crack the windows, wash your hands, and just stay by yourself. But that time period for your question is around 10 days.
10 days. Wow. Okay. Dr. Julie Lewis from OSF Healthcare St. Joseph in Bloomington, I want to bring you into the conversation now. There was a tweet from another hospital in Central Illinois that said it's finding 1 in 6 patients who are just being screened for, you know, they come into the hospital for other procedures, maybe they're being just screened routinely for COVID, and they're being found, 1 in 6 are being found to have COVID, I should say. Not everyone is screened. 1 in 6 have COVID. And they're asymptomatic. Are you finding COVID in patients who come in for other reasons?
You know, I think when you were asking the question about how this surge is different than others, for me, not being in New York City, you know, that is the biggest difference that I've noticed. I said jokingly the other day, and I'm at work today, I said jokingly the other day during my shift, if you're not here for COVID, you have COVID. If you're here for anything, you either got over COVID, you have COVID, or you're getting COVID. And it's kind of joking around, but in reality, I err on the side of not being as cautious as some people. And I am wearing my N95 my entire shift now, where this is the first time I've been that, you know, paranoid with my patients, that I just assume everyone has COVID one way or another. I've seen patients for, you know, a child, an accidental ingestion of a parent's medication, they had COVID. I see a patient for, I stepped on a tack, they had COVID. You know, you don't know this time around going into a room if someone is COVID, where previously it seemed a little bit more obvious with the previous surge, at least in our location, because of our numbers in Bloomington, Illinois, it was a little more obvious. People had respiratory symptoms. But, you know, this time around, there are a little bit more frequently the asymptomatic or mildly symptomatic, and people feel, you know, My son just got over COVID. My other son just got over COVID. The first son said, I've gone to school feeling way worse than this, you know, and the other son was completely asymptomatic. He's 12 years old. We only tested because he had a positive exposure. So I definitely can believe that one in six are positive, even if they do not have symptoms. And I think for us in healthcare, that for me is a little bit more of the challenge and the burnout this time around is you can't let your guard down. You know, there was one day I failed to switch to my N95 and I wore my mask in a room. And as I start talking to them, it wasn't a COVID suspected patient, but once I started talking to them, more of the story comes out and I realized this is going to be COVID, you know? So you just have to be much more hypervigilant this time around and treat everyone as if it is COVID for your own safety. So I can believe that, unfortunately.
We need to take a break in about a minute here, but before we do, Dr. McAvoy, just quickly, you said, you know, you're getting people coming to the ER who are the sort of, what do you say, walking sick, but like they shouldn't be. At what point should someone go to the hospital if they have COVID?
Yeah, absolutely. So walking well is kind of the term we use. They actually appear well and otherwise. But yeah, the symptoms that raise any red flags for me are breathing difficulties. Those are the patients that tend to get into significant trouble and are the ones that are probably ending up in Dr. Prickett's ICU. So if you have runny nose, congestion, sore throat, cough, those are all symptoms that you should be able to manage at home. You start having any significant chest pain or difficulty breathing, or if you're vomiting so much that you can't keep anything down, those are the main symptoms to look out for that should raise the red flag for you to come to the ER.
All right, we're going to continue this conversation after a break. We're talking about the latest surge in COVID-19 cases, seemingly driven by the Omicron variant, although there's still also Delta out there. And frankly, we're not doing a ton of screening to know, but the numbers don't lie. The numbers are off the charts compared to where they've been at previous points in this pandemic. We're talking about this with Dr. Michelle Prickett, Dr. Julie Lewis, and Dr. Brendan McAvoy from across Illinois. We want to take your calls, 800-222-9455. If you have questions, or maybe if you work in a healthcare setting, 800-222-9455. More to come after a short break. You're listening to The 21st. Stay with us. This is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about the latest surge in the COVID-19 pandemic, and specifically about healthcare workers who have been dealing with this for going on 2 years now. A lot of them are burned out. Endless shifts, constant overtime, seeing their colleagues getting sick, seeing their colleagues leaving the profession in many cases. We're speaking about this with Dr. Michelle Prickett, who's pulmonary and critical care specialist at Northwestern Memorial Hospital. Dr. Julie Lewis is medical director of the emergency department at OSF Healthcare St. Joseph Medical Center in Bloomington. And Dr. Brendan McAvoy is attending physician in the Department of Emergency Medicine at the Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana, also professor at the Carle, Illinois College of Medicine. And Dr. Prickett, the Omicron variant has this reputation of being, it's more mild. You hear people say that. If that's the case, why are we seeing so much hospitalization, you know, the highest rates during the pandemic?
So I actually don't see mild cases at all. And so I think one of the big indicators are a lot of what makes it appear mild is the fact that we have so many people vaccinated and it's cutting down the numbers of what we had seen before. So the patients that I'm seeing in my ICU I'll just say none of the patients I've seen in my ICU have had boosters. The biggest thing you can do to protect yourself is to get a booster. So the severe illness, we are seeing it with Omicron. We are seeing it much less for people that have had boosters. And the patients that have had vaccines, they are having a lighter course than those that are unvaccinated. So our unvaccinated patients look just like they did with Delta and any of the prior versions. We're just seeing few of them in the ICU because of the importance and the widespread uptake of those that have been vaccinated. So I do think, you know, that we are seeing a ton of cases across the community, but the big thing that's holding out the severity, at least in my perspective, has been the uptake of vaccinations to help limit the severe disease.
And Dr. Lewis, I wonder if you see a difference in the symptoms of people when they're coming in.
You know, I thought about this question, and in my opinion, because I do see a ton of, you know, 20-year-olds, especially we have two colleges here. So I see a ton of that age group who has not been vaccinated, and they are having, you know, mild symptoms. My opinion on that is that even if it's, you know, let's say previously it was 20% of patients with Delta were needing hospitalization. This virus is so virulent. This strain of COVID is so virulent and so much more contagious than the previous strain that there is such an exponentially larger number of cases that, let's say, only 2% of people, you know, with this strain of virus are requiring hospitalization. Sure, it's causing a more mild course than in more people, but the numbers are so much higher that 2% is now surpassing the previous 10% in case numbers. So that is my take on it. I don't know if it's, you know, completely founded, but looking at the patient population that I see here, which there's a large healthy population here, that's kind of, I'm not admitting as many patients for respiratory failure, but there are, everyone seems to have been in contact with COVID now. And so it seems that the numbers are larger enough that, you know, we're seeing more cases of hospitalization as a result of that.
Dr. McAvoy, I wonder when people present in your emergency room, are they ever angry? I mean, there's a lot of misinformation. Do you ever have to deal with patients who maybe don't quite believe that COVID is a real thing that makes people very sick?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean that happens all the time. And I think that's certainly a component that contributes to this compassion fatigue that a lot of doctors and nurses are experiencing. I think, unfortunately, this pandemic and this virus has become so politicized in a lot of ways that people have very strong opinions one way or another. And that leads to conflict. And it's absolutely something I see in the ER. People coming in demanding a certain treatment that I know that doesn't work and is not the right course of action for this patient. And they get very upset when I choose not to or tell them that they're not going to be receiving that. So it's certainly something we experience. And I think that is making the whole burnout situation a lot worse for a lot of people.
All right. I want to go now to the phones. 800-222-9455 is the number to call. If you have a question for one of our guests, maybe if you're a healthcare worker yourself, or if you just have a question about the COVID-19 pandemic and the latest Omicron surge, 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. And Matt is on the line from Springfield. Matt, thank you for calling in.
Hey, thanks for having me. I really didn't so much have a question. I work in healthcare in Springfield, and I just want to say to people, we are at our wit's end. We are doing absolutely our best. Now is not the time to give up. Now is not the time to refuse. We're doing this for you so we can all get through this. And we are just as burnt out as all of you. We are subject to conditions where we aren't seeing hazard pay. We are putting everything forward to provide the best quality. But please, it's not just a fight for healthcare workers. You guys have to take part in this too for us to get through this. Thank you.
All right, Matt. Thank you for that. Dr. Prickett, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, thank you, Matt, for what you do. I think you said it really eloquently. We are tired. We are members of this community. We want this community to be well, but we need our community to help us. People talk about frontline workers, but honestly, we are the last line of defense. So all of the efforts that we need to help make our job easier so we can make your family member and loved one comfortable and make them at their best health, it needs to happen outside of the hospital walls. And so it's as much as we are tired of wearing masks and we are tired of not being able to do the things that we want and feel like we can do them safely, it's we're still in this fight. It's still a fight within our hospital walls, and it's still something that is most important outside within our community to minimize the spread so that we can reduce the numbers and have just get through this. But I absolutely hear you. I totally agree. And that's how we feel as well.
Dr. Lewis, you just heard the caller from the
yeah,
call from
it
Matt.
Was actually going to ask if I could throw something in there.
Yeah,
in
please.
That
go
too.
Ahead.
Matt, I worked in Springfield at Memorial Medical Center for 6 years. So I don't know if I know you, but hi. I just wanted to say that we take care of people all the time who their health conditions are a result of their own choices. We're not bitter over that. We take care of people with COPD who smoke, heart disease, who, you know, make poor choices in their diet. That's what we do. We don't judge. We are, you know, 100% committed to what we're doing. And we do not treat people differently based on, you know, vaccination status or anything like that. So I do want people to know if they're coming in, use us as a resource. Every patient that has chosen not to be vaccinated, I don't want people to get angry. You know, try and realize if we ask you, you know, why did you choose not to get vaccinated? I'm trying to use that as a means to educate. So people, you know, I know there's a lot of misinformation out there and I understand that. And if people in healthcare are confused sometimes as to, you know, quarantine time and all of these things, we understand the public being confused also. So I would say if you come in and you aren't vaccinated, use that as an opportunity to speak with a healthcare provider that's caring for you. And maybe we can help get through some of those reasons, you know, and answer some of those concerns that you had or questions you had. And I found that that's at least seemed to be helpful for me in some of those conversations to help people understand why perhaps, you know, a fear they had or something they were told may not have been accurate. And I think, you know, the burnout portion, when people come in angry, when people come in defensive, that's a little bit harder. But if you're open to just having that conversation with your healthcare provider, it's you know, similar to trying to stop smoking. Use us for that knowledge that we have, because trust me, we all researched this so much when it first started because we were equally scared and equally confused. So I promote taking advantage of us if you are sick enough that you require coming into the hospital for your COVID symptoms, let us put those fears to rest about vaccination.
All right, let's see if we can work through a few more calls we have here. Kay is on the line from Normal. Kay, thank you for calling in.
Yes, I had a question regarding home tests. The idea is really great, but next month when more people are going to be using them, if there are positive results, will those results be reported anyplace? Are we going to know, you know, just how many have COVID then?
Okay. I don't know if that's more of a public health question, but Dr. Lewis, do you have a perspective on that maybe?
You know, I've questioned that too, because our positives in my house just recently were home tests. So I do not believe that positive home tests are being reported anywhere unless you report them. So we had to, for my children for school, we had to get official tests that were positive in order for them to be reported, in order for the excused absence. So I believe you can either just call the health department and say, hey, I have a positive test, and then they can record that for you. Or it would require getting an actual official positive test. Now we experienced this with the first very, very first surges when this started and we weren't testing everyone. So we knew that the actual numbers were probably much higher than those being reported. So it's definitely possible now as well with the ability to do home tests that the numbers are even higher than what we are seeing in the news. But I would suggest calling your local health department and letting them know that you had a home positive and then it would be recorded.
Okay, another caller on the line, Janine, is calling in from Champaign. Janine, thank you for calling in.
Hi, yes, thank you so much for taking my call. I'm looking for a little bit of clarification. I heard that the the symptoms that are having, you know, requiring people to be hospitalized, that you're not seeing as many respiratory issues, but that the hospitalizations are still going up. And I was wondering if you could share a little bit about what are those kinds of symptoms that are severe enough that require someone to be hospitalized. I've heard that it isn't respiratory, but I'm not really clear on what symptoms are kind of, you know, getting out of hand enough that do require people to have treatment at the hospital currently.
All right. Thank you for that, Janine. Dr. McAvoy, do you want to take that one?
Yeah, absolutely. So in my experience, and I think in most of my colleagues' experience in the ER, still the main symptoms that are causing severe illness and causing hospitalization and ICU level care are respiratory difficulty. So symptoms of shortness of breath, which oftentimes can coincide with some chest pain as well. Breathing difficulty is the main symptom that I'm seeing, that I'm hospitalizing patients for, during the Delta surge as well as in the Omicron surge. And the patients that I'm seeing right now with those severe respiratory difficulties almost universally across the board are unvaccinated. So if you are experiencing any sort of respiratory difficulty, that is absolutely a reason to come to the ER. If you have a pulse oximeter at home and you measure your oxygen levels and those are low, that's another absolute reason to come to the ER.
All right, we have another caller on the line. Raja is traveling on line one. Raja, thank you for calling in. Raja, are you with us? I think I can hear us in the background. Maybe he's listening to your radio, not your phone. All right, I'm gonna move on from that. Dr. Prickett, we heard that. Can you just talk a little bit more about morale among colleagues and healthcare workers more generally right now? We heard the caller. You responded to that earlier. We heard from the nurse at the beginning. Have you seen colleagues, either physicians or nurses or other, you know, respiratory therapists, what have you, who have left the profession during this pandemic?
Absolutely. So I think we have all seen our colleagues probably be the most stressed and the most overwhelmed and the most overworked, in my career, at least, which goes on 15 years now as an ICU doctor. So, and it manifests in many ways. People are just having, emotional issues, just trying to manage and working on coping. People feel completely physically fatigued. This is, ICU medicine, as are most of the things in the hospital, is a very physical activity. Trying to get patients to move around is quite a bit. And just the long work hours. So people are making decisions for themselves, for their best personal self-care. So we have lost some people. We've had people transition into different roles. We've had quite a bit of turnover to just keep the system running. And I think what people outside of healthcare don't realize is what a team healthcare is. So when we are in the ICU, it is not just the nurse doing one thing or the doctor or the respiratory therapist. We're all really working as a team. So keeping those teams together and supporting each other is important. But when everyone is stressed, it makes it really difficult to have that camaraderie at the level that we have been used to and the familiarity with that. And so absolutely, it's been stressors upon all of us, and people turn over or have to take time off for many different reasons. And we all understand that and are supportive, again, of our team members.
Okay, we need to take a break. We were going to just make this a two-segment conversation today, but given the number of calls we have, we understand the doctors who are with us have generously agreed to stay till the end of the hour. So we're going to extend this segment. The conversation we were planning on a new exhibit on Gen X planned for the Illinois State Museum. We're going to bring that to you probably sometime next week instead. So I will say, if you are out there, you have a question for one of our guests, or if you are on the line, please hold. But if you have a question and you haven't called in yet, 800-222-9455 is the number, 800-222-9455. More to come with Dr. Brendan McAvoy of the Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana, Dr. Julie Lewis of the OSF Healthcare St. Joseph Medical Center in Bloomington, and Dr. Michelle Prickett who works in the ICU at Northwestern Memorial Hospital. That's all coming up after a break here on the 21st. Again, if you want to join our conversation, the number to call 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. If you're holding on the line, please stick with us for another couple minutes. We have to take this break. We will get to your call right away when we come back. More to come after a short break. This is the 21st. Stay with us. Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about the latest surge in COVID-19. There are a record number of hospitalizations of COVID-positive patients across Illinois. 7,100 cases, as we heard yesterday in the briefing from Governor Pritzker and Dr. Ezeke, the public health director. We're speaking about that with Dr. Michelle Prickett, who works at Northwestern Memorial Hospital in the pulmonary and critical care there. Dr. Julie Lewis is emergency department medical director at OSF Healthcare St. Joseph Medical Center in Bloomington. And Dr. Brendan McAvoy is physician in the Department of Emergency Medicine at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana, also assistant professor at Carle Illinois College of Medicine. 800-222-9455 is the number, 800-222-9455. And I think we have Raja back on line one. Raja, thank you for being patient. Go ahead with your question. Okay, I think we have lost Raja again. Let me go to Ben now on line two.
Yes, my question is, I'm a 36-year-old male. I've got rheumatoid arthritis pretty bad, but when I got diagnosed with COVID, it seemed to completely compound my rheumatoid to where I was basically disabled for a couple of days. Felt like my bones were being crushed. Do you guys have any insight onto whether or not COVID was a major factor in all that?
All right. Thank you for that question, Ben. Dr. Prickett, I wonder if you have any thoughts on that subject.
Well, I don't know all the details, but we certainly have seen COVID cause a significant inflammatory component in the patients that we're seeing. So patients that have underlying autoimmune disease or diseases that can be flared with inflammation, such as rheumatoid arthritis, can certainly have them exacerbated with COVID cases. So COVID has a lot of elements to it, but we know about respiratory. But we also see really high rates of inflammatory markers, as well as a lot of clotting. And so those are the two things that we don't talk as much about with COVID, but we have been seeing since the very beginning. So again, sight unseen, not knowing any history, can we have exacerbations of rheumatologic conditions with COVID? Yes, we have been seeing this since the beginning, and it is quite possible in many cases that I've cared for.
Okay, let's go to another caller. Josh is on line three from Urbana. Josh, thank you for calling in.
Hi, yeah. I'm a 23-year-old male, and you know, a lot of my friends in the last few weeks got breakthrough cases. They were all vaccinated. I'm not sure if any of them were boosted, though. And my main question is, you know, is there any positive outlook on the horizon for younger people who, you know, want to get back to enjoying their young lives and things of that nature? And I mean, or is there nothing we can do besides just continue to wear masks and stay in as much as possible and, you know, get our regular boosters? Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you for that question. Dr. McAvoy, I think I've heard a version of this as the vaxxed and done feeling that's out there, right? People who've been vaccinated, they want to live their lives. What duty do they owe to the unvaccinated? Take it where you will, Dr. McAvoy.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I think this is, you know, this is a very difficult situation that everyone's experiencing, a lot of this fatigue with this pandemic having gone for now close to 2 years. People are wanting to just be living back to a normal life. And unfortunately, we're just not there yet. I will say, you know, what I would say is, like, the way I think about it is you can't just be thinking about yourself in this situation. It's important to be thinking about the community at large, thinking about your neighbor who may be immunosuppressed, your grandparents who is old and has comorbidities, your son or daughter or cousin who is under the age of 5 and can't be vaccinated. I think we have to continue to look at this from a kind of altruistic perspective in the community at large. We're all in this together. And it has been universally difficult across the board for everyone. Everyone is experiencing the same levels of stress and anxiety surrounding this. And I certainly empathize with that caller wanting to just kind of go back to the life as normal, but unfortunately we are not there yet.
Briefly, we got two questions. I think this is more of a sort of a fact thing from a text, and somebody who called it, Susan called in asking, if you have a home oxygen reader, what is the number that you need to be watching for? Dr. Lewis, maybe you can take that.
Sure. And I think this has even changed at different hospitals based on how full they are. But we've been telling people here, if you're below 92%, so if you are not a smoker and otherwise would have a normal oxygen level, if you are below 92% on your oxygen meter, and that's not just one quick read and then it goes up to 98, if you're sitting there and you're at rest and it's reading accurately and you're at 91%, then it's worth coming in and making sure that that's a legitimate read and letting us check where your oxygen is, especially if you're really struggling. And I've told patients, if you're struggling and you're breathing 45 times a minute, to keep that oxygen level higher, by all means, come in. But if you're, just feeling winded and you check your oxygen, I would say below 92, so 91% on down.
Okay, Randy is calling in from Southern Peoria on line 4. Randy, thank you for calling in.
Yeah, I'm a farmer. I'm 70 years old. I got the vaccines in February and March and the booster in August. And I would, we're way out here by ourselves, but, we're probably vulnerable if we were around people. I would like to get the fourth. Should I get the Johnson & Johnson if I change it? Because it would be time probably to. Which one should I get? And how it has affected us, we just can't hire any help. So my wife and I, who are 70, my wife, if there's two tractors in the field now at 70 years old, she's driving the other one. So, I mean, we're really isolated now because you just can't hire any help. So that young man who would like to get back to normal, come out and help us.
All right. Making connections here on the 21st. Randy, thank you for that. Thank you for helping to put food on our table. And I understand you had the Moderna shot first off. So I'm not sure who might want to take that to answer him about, moving from Moderna to Johnson & Johnson if he ends up getting a fourth shot, which I don't know that that's actually officially been recommended yet. Maybe if anyone wants to take that.
Sure, Randy. Thank you for your work, Randy. I'm from a family of farmers remotely as well, so I appreciate that. And thank you for getting your booster. The biggest thing we can talk right now is, this should really be more viewed as a 3-shot series, and the booster is really the final thing that we'll need. Omicron has breakthrough significant with patients with 2 shots. We still can see breakthrough in about 30% of patients with a booster. So you getting your booster in August was really the best thing that you can do to help protect yourself. In terms of a fourth shot, we have really only looked at that for patients that have had significant immune dysfunction. So, and that is typically those that are getting immune replacement therapy or have organ transplants. Solid organ transplants are the two big areas. There's some other ones. So if you fall in that category, definitely look at it. A booster or a fourth shot for you. But in our current practice, the ones that you have is really a great deal. That may change over time, and people are developing boosters for some of the variants, and I think that's a good thing. So this is going to be a little bit of a moving target, but you are well protected, and thank you for doing that.
Dr. McAvoy, I want to come back to this idea of burnout and burning the candle at both ends and in the middle, as Dr. Ezeke said in that clip at the beginning of the show. What are you seeing with regard to that? You mentioned that you've worked almost every day since the new year, or since Christmas. Are you seeing that burnout in the emergency department in Champaign or in Urbana, I should say?
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, and I'm seeing it both firsthand at the hospital and the ER that I work in, as well as all of my friends and colleagues, around the country who work in healthcare. I was talking to one of my friends, close friends, about this just the other day, actually. I actually felt pretty fortunate that I made it through the first 18 months, almost 2 years of the pandemic, without feeling too overwhelmed, too burned out. I mean, I was pretty fresh out of my training, which I think was probably part of that. But these last 2 weeks, for the first time, I've really felt a little bit burnt out and more stressed than usual. And this is something that I know every single ER doctor that I've talked to, inpatient medicine physician, nurses across the board, are feeling this as well. And it's tough. And I think the one of the buzzwords right now that is going around is compassion fatigue. And I think, that's one of the more difficult things that I'm trying to deal with myself. As a physician, all of my training and everything my background comes from, coming from a place of empathy, right, for my patients. And I have empathy for my patients, and I continue to do that. But it's becoming more and more difficult when patients come in with COVID, and it could have been preventable, right? And so I think it's just with just the pure volume and the stress associated with it, it's been difficult for all of us across the board.
Dr. Lewis, do you have to fight that compassion fatigue as well?
Hey there. I personally, I have a hard time with the term compassion fatigue, because I feel that all of us went into this. I feel like we're an unusually compassionate type of people. So I don't like calling it compassion fatigue, because I still have compassion for my patients, even if they're unvaccinated. It's just fatigue. It's not that I'm angry with my patients. I don't feel that I'm, or any of my colleagues, I don't feel any of us are treating people any differently. It's just fatigue in general. It's fatigue with, I'm here today. I was here a few days ago. I wasn't supposed to be. Every time you think you get something under control, another shoe falls, and that's the fatigue. It's another provider's out with COVID. Something else, gets dropped, not with somebody who isn't available. So it's more a fatigue in general with working, shifts back to back that you normally wouldn't, with less hours in between than you normally would be comfortable doing. Everybody having to work extra because, we are understaffed. So I would prefer to say that we are all extremely fatigued in healthcare at this point. We still, I feel, are compassionate, but definitely tired and needing breaks.
And Dr. Prickett, what about you? Compassion or fatigue or compassion fatigue?
I don't know the term. I think, we're all human. Healthcare providers aren't any different than anybody else. So we're human. We have a large workload, much larger than we have been, but we still go home to families that are going to school and dealing with, school closures, remote learning. We have all of that. So I totally agree with the fatigue. It's more of, I just feel like, my tank gets to be pretty empty, and I have to focus on where I want to use that energy. And there's just a limited amount. So we try to refill our tanks. We try for some time off, and kind of what Dr. Lewis said, you get some time off, you think this is the day I'm going to get this done. And then something else comes up. And so it kind of takes that away. So it's just knowing that we have we're human, we have limited, we can only do so much, and we're no different than anybody else. So if you were asked to do, run on a treadmill forever, we would get tired, and we're the same way. And so we work a lot at the hospital. I feel like I have a lot of compassion for my patients, but there's only so much of me to give. And I need to give it both at the hospital, and I need to give it both, at home with my boys and my husband as well. So I think that's my biggest message to us is, help us not to come in so we can have a break and we can really give our all to you and your loved ones if and when they do need healthcare.
Dr. McAvoy, less than a minute left in our show. Do you want to make maybe a final appeal to people about what they ought to do if they're on the fence about getting vaccinated or getting boosted?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the biggest, the most important thing that everyone can do right now is get vaccinated, get boosted. Unfortunately, we're still battling this pandemic and this virus, and that is our best way out of this. And so, like I said earlier, if you're not doing it for yourself, do it for your loved ones, do it for your neighbors, do it for your colleagues. You know, we as healthcare workers, we're tired, but we're still here for you. This is what we were trained to do, and we will be here to help you. And we would love it if you would help us too by getting vaccinated and getting boosted.
Dr. McAvoy, Dr. Prickett, Dr. Lewis, thank you for doing what you do, and thank you for taking time out of your care obligations to share your stories with us today on the 21st.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Brendan McAvoy is attending physician in the Department of Emergency Medicine at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Dr. Michelle Prickett is a pulmonary and critical care specialist at Northwestern Memorial Hospital. Dr. Julie Lewis is medical director of the emergency department at OSF Healthcare St. Joseph Medical Center in Bloomington. And that's all the time we have for our program today. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again next week.